Well, good morning, everyone. Before we jump into the sermon this morning, I want to take a few moments to say thank you. Thank you for being a church that gives space for the senior pastor to not be here. It's been 2 weeks. I've missed the last 2 weeks with you. 2 weeks ago, I was in Carson City visiting my aunt, who's dying of pancreatic cancer. It's the same cancer that took my mom 3 years ago, her sister. My brother, who's an Episcopalian priest, and I realized that, you know what? We need to find some time for the two of us to together be with her. Our Aunt Alice is the one that stepped up big after our mom died. She became the one that would call on a birthday. She's the one that would send the card on the anniversary. The kind of things that moms usually do, she stepped up. And so as my brother and I tried to figure out a date that would work for the two of us to get together, that was the weekend that worked out. And so thank you for allowing me the chance to go be with her. I'm hoping to be able to see her a few more times, but my brother and I realized that this is probably the last time that the two of us together can do that. So thank you for giving me the space to go be with our aunt. This last weekend, I was in Chicago with a couple other people from our staff as we were at our annual denomination's midwinter conference, and it was fantastic. We were able to be encouraged. We were able to be equipped. We were able to be part of some very significant conversations. We were in workshops. We were in sessions. We were taking notes, and it was good. And you'll probably be hearing about the impact of this last week, because we didn't get home until Friday. You'll be hearing about the impact of this past week for the next handful of months. And so it was significant to be able to be with our larger covenant family. And so thank you for that. And then next week I will be in Washington performing a wedding. Actually, I'm co-officiating a wedding with a Scottish pastor. He's the pastor of the groom, I'm the pastor of the bride, and we're doing it together. But after I get back from that, I'm here for a long time. Trust me, I'm not going anywhere. We'll be jumping into Lent. But being away as I have been over the last handful of weeks, it was important for my mind, it was important for my heart and my soul. And in the midst of it, I realized how much I appreciate you. I consider it a privilege to be the pastor of this church. And I came to appreciate you in profound ways over the last couple of weeks. I love you guys. And you guys care for my wife and I well. And I am so very, very thankful for you. So I thought that needed to be said before we dive in this morning. We are in the middle of a series that we are calling Questions God Asks. And we're looking at different questions that God asks in the Old Testament. We started out with the question, why are you here? Then looked at, can these bones live? Last week, Justin walked us through, were you there? But this morning, we get a different question. And the question we get this morning is, what is in your hand? It's a question that God asked Moses. What is in your hand? But in order to truly appreciate the question, we got to understand the context in which the question was asked. And you've discovered this if you've been with us the last couple of weeks as we've gone through this series. The context of the question is awfully important. To understand this question well, what is in your hand, we need to go backwards a little bit. He asked the question of Moses in Exodus chapter 4. But to appreciate Exodus chapter 4, you need to look at Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3 is the burning bush. And so you get this moment, Moses tending sheep, walking along, sees that there is a bush that is on fire, but the fire is not consuming the bush. He says, this is an odd thing. I will go and explore. And so he goes over to kind of figure out what's going on with this very, very bizarre burning bush. And then God speaks to Moses through the burning bush, says, hey, buddy, you're on holy ground. Take off your shoes. He takes off the shoes. And then there's this conversation that takes place. And essentially God introduces himself to Moses and then tells Moses, I'm sending you back to Egypt to deliver an enslaved people. Almost instantly, Moses starts coming up with excuses of why this is a bad plan. And this is the conversation that takes place in chapter 3. And by the time you get to chapter 4, Moses answers, what if they do not, more excuses here, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say the Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what is in your hand? What is in your hand? Moses replied, a staff. So if you're taking notes this morning, Moses' response, a staff. Here's the problem. There's a couple different ways we can interpret Moses' response, because in the Bible, it simply says a staff. We don't hear his tone of voice. We don't see the look on his face. We don't see his body language. So there's a couple of different ways we can interpret Moses' response when he says a staff. And one way that we can interpret this is Moses is saying, it's just a staff. What is in your hand? A staff? It's a piece of wood? It's not that big of a deal. It's just a staff. Never underestimate what God can do with what is in your hand. Never underestimate what God can do with what is in your hand. It's just a staff. Consider that Samson killed hundreds of Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. Ruth had some grain. David had some rocks and a slingshot, killed Goliath. Don't forget about the little kid with the Happy Meal. 5 loaves, 2 fish. Feeds over 5,000 people. The woman with the alabaster jar that anoints Jesus. Never underestimate what God can do with what is in your hand. So let me ask you this morning, what's in your hand? I mean, we can ask it very literally. So what's in my hand this morning? I've got a microphone. I've got a wedding ring. Do I believe that God can use a microphone, that God can use a marriage to do remarkable things? Or is it just a microphone, just a marriage? What's in your hand this morning? Some of you have a Bible in your hand, I can see. Some of you have a pen in your hand. Some of you have a phone. Can God use the things in your hand to do remarkable things? Can God use your ability to write and to text to accomplish remarkable things? Or is it just a pen? All right, let's move from literal but remain a little bit concrete. What is in your hand? Well, you've got a home. You've got a car, you've got a bank account, you've got clothes, you've got food. Do you actually believe that God can use those things to do the remarkable? Or is it just a house? Is it just your savings? Or do you actually believe that God can use what is in your hand to do the remarkable? All right, let's get a little abstract. What is in your hand? You've got time. You've got passions. You've got skills. You've got failures. You've got pain. Do you believe that God can use those things to do the remarkable? A number of years ago, about 4 years ago or so, 4 or 5 years ago, when we got the diagnosis that my mom had pancreatic cancer. I wasn't quite sure what to do with that. I knew that it was essentially a death sentence because pancreatic cancer is pancreatic cancer. And so what was in my hand at that moment? I had sadness. I had a certain amount of grief, a certain amount of anger. I had all those things. Those are the things in my hand when I found out the diagnosis of my mom's condition. But about the same time, a dear friend of mine found out that his mom was diagnosed stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And what did he have in his hand at that moment? He had confusion, and he had anger, and he had great sadness. But God used what was in his hand, and he used what was in my hand, and together he took that and he mixed it all up, and we were able to comfort one another in ways that nobody else could comfort us. I remember doing the graveside service for his mom. And there came a moment in the graveside service where I just got down on my knees and just talked to his son, who was about 3 years old. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I talked to him about his grandma. And it was just this little intimate moment. Afterwards, my friend came up to me and he says, "I am so thankful." I said, "For what?" He goes, "I am so thankful that your daughters are old enough that they're going to have memories of their grandma." He recognized that his son is probably not going to remember much about his grandmother. But my friend had this tremendous grief and this pain, and that's what he had in his hand. And he goes, "Watch what God will do with this." And God allowed him to see that I had been blessed to be able to have daughters that grew old enough so that they would always remember my mom. What's in your hand? If we conclude that what is in our hand is just, then we greatly underestimate what God can do with the just. But pay attention to God's response to Moses and his potential just. The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. Makes sense to me. I actually like snakes, but if my staff became a snake, I'd have a Scooby-Doo moment. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." No. I like snakes, but if I were to go grab a snake, I wouldn't be grabbing it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." Again, never underestimate what God can do with what is in your hand. And as you begin to realize what is in your hand, whether it is the abstract, whether it is the very tangible, whatever it is, when you begin to understand that what is in your hand can be used by God in remarkable ways, usually the next thing that happens after you come to a realization that it is more than just, usually what happens next is God goes, "Great, throw it down." Now that you realize what you have, are you willing to throw it down? Are you willing to give it away? There was a poem I learned years ago. It said, "She asked him for forever and a promise that would last. He said, 'Babe, you know I love you, but I can't commit to that.' She said, 'Love isn't love until you give it away.' A father watched in silence, saw his son become a man. There was a distance felt between them because he could not understand that love isn't love until you give it away. We can entertain compassion for a world in need of care, but the road of good intentions doesn't lead to anywhere. You see, love isn't love until you give it away. There was a man who walked on water. He came to set the people free. He was the ultimate example of what love could truly be, for his love was his life, and he gave it away. What is in your hand? Moses says, I have a staff. It's just a staff. And God says, throw it down and watch what I can do with just. What's in your hand this morning? You might think what is in your hand is tremendously insignificant. You might be one of those people that uses the word just to describe what you have. It's just a staff. Never underestimate what God can do with just a staff. One of the students I worked with years ago when I was still living in Southern California was a young man by the name of Brady Phelps. Brady Phelps, he had a couple things in his hand that most people would think tremendously insignificant. In fact, if you think that the things in Brady's hand could be used to do the remarkable, you'd be looked at like you were crazy. I shared this with some of you a handful of years ago. But Brady took what was in his hand, just a staff, and threw it down, and God did something remarkable with it. So remarkable that he ended up making national news. And it was picked up by a local news outlet in San Diego where he lives. Take a look.
Well, San Diego man is taking breakfast to a whole new level. Recently, his pancake art has been attracting national attention, and now he's using his flapjack flipping skills to raise money for a global cause. This isn't just a stove. It's a tool for Brady Phelps to craft his edible works of art.
So it was like total trial and error. I made my daughter an Abby from Sesame Street.
What began as a fun breakfast hobby to share with his kids on Saturday mornings,
I have to do it backwards. I found that out the hard way.
Has transformed into a major fundraising campaign.
We're talking Elmo and Cookie Monster, and now I'm, you know, making, you know, the Starry Night from Van Gogh.
For $100, Phelps will make you a custom pancake, send you an Instagram photo of it, along with a time-lapse video of his creation.
You're telling me that people are paying $100 to look at a picture of a pancake? Yes, they are. Because I think it's the cause that people are getting behind.
That cause? A group called Charity Water. The nonprofit provides clean drinking water for people in developing countries.
People whose options are, let's hike 8 hours a day to go and get filthy, dirty water, bring it back to our family, drink it, get diseases, and sometimes die. The other option is don't drink any water and die of dehydration.
His hot cakes are now a hot item. Since he started last month, the self-titled Pancake Dad has raised $38,000 using his homemade palette of squirt bottles filled with batter.
I just use food coloring. The brown ones, I use just cocoa powder.
He whips up almost any request, from famous paintings and sports figures to pop culture icons and cartoon characters. More than 150 of these fancy flapjacks and counting. Each one takes him up to 20 minutes, depending on the complexity.
Do I use the fine tip one, or do I use the thicker one?
Still, he insists he's no amazing artist.
I can't draw at all, and so when I started doing this, it's like this mental tracing. I'm staring at a phone, I'm staring at an image. I am terrible at portraits. People will send me pictures. I just did a picture. Someone said, here's a picture. It's our engagement photo. We're getting married next week. Turn us into a pancake. And I'm like, I'm not an artist. I don't know how to do that.
Just a devoted dad with a simple passion for pancakes.
You never know what it's going to look like when you flip it.
Aww. Wow.
Now, I have that now pancake that he made us right here. And he's just such a nice guy, really devoted to this cause, try to provide clean drinking water to as many people as possible around the world. And I asked him what he's going to do with all these pancakes, because he's got so many, as you saw in the freezer there. He mentioned maybe he's going to hold a breakfast at a homeless shelter, perhaps. But his goal is to raise $50,000 by the end of the year. He's up to $38,000 right now. And if you would like your own custom pancake, just go to 10news.com and click on the red TV button.
It's World Food Day today, so I love the message there, because it's also a call to action day for people to really take on hunger. And this is exactly what that does when it's water and food throughout the world. And you're a trusting man to bring a pancake in near me.
No one's eaten
it's
it
It's not
going
to last long. I don't care if you've touched it.
So what's in your hand? Brady had just a spatula. $50,000 later, people had clean drinking water. What's in your hand? I'm going to ask the worship team to come up, because we're going to pause before we get into another way to understand Moses' response. And they're going to play a song. Words are going to be on the screen. Listen, read the words. But as you listen and read, put yourself in the place of Moses and listen to God ask you a question. What is in your hand? Do you believe that God can take what is in your hand and use it to do the remarkable?
From walking, and Lord, I'm so alone. Lord, the dark is creeping in, it's creeping up to swallow me. I think I'll stop, rest here a while. This is all. This is all that I can say right now. And this is all that I can give. And this is all that I can say right now. And this is all that I can give. Yeah, that's my everything. Did you see me crying? Oh, and did you hear me call your name? Wasn't it you I gave my heart to? Wish you'd remember where you set it down. And this is all. This is all that I can say right now, right now. Oh, no, it's not much. And this is all that I can give. Yeah, that's my everything. And this is all that I can say right now, right now. Oh, no, it's not much. And this is all that I can give. Yeah, that's my everything. You were standing here. I didn't notice you were crying too. I didn't notice you were holding me. I did know that that was you washing my feet. And this is all that I can say right now, oh no, it's not much. And this is all that I can give, yeah, that's my everything. This is all that I can say right now, oh no, it's not much. And this is all that I can give, yeah, that's my everything. This is all that I can say right now, oh no, it's not much. And this is all that I can give, yeah, that's my everything. And this is all that I can say right now, oh no, it's not much. And this is all that I can give, yeah, that's my everything. That's my everything. Yeah, that's my everything. Yeah, that's my everything. Yeah, that's my everything.
God asked Moses, what is in your hand? And his response, a staff. I mentioned a few moments ago, there's a couple different ways we can interpret Moses' response. One is for him to go, it's just a staff. But I think we've seen, never underestimate what God can do with just. But there's another way to interpret Moses' answer here. Moses, what is in your hand? A staff. Yes, this staff, my staff, and this staff is very significant, God. This staff is tremendously significant. You see, I am a shepherd. I am a shepherd. I take care of sheep. It is my role in the family. It's my role in the community. This is the way that I provide for my family. I am a shepherd, and a shepherd needs a staff. It's tremendously important. This represents my identity. In addition to that, God, what kind of shepherd would I be if I didn't have a staff? How would I keep the wolves away from the sheep? And if the sheep are killed, how then do I provide for my family? How do I provide for my community? I need this staff in order to take care of things. And I don't know if you've noticed this, God, but I am 80 years old. And I am chasing stupid sheep up and down a mountainside. I need this staff to be able to physically keep up. I need this staff. It is my strength. What is in my hand? A staff. And this staff is tremendously important. It is very significant. Of course, God looks at him and says, great, throw it down. Seriously, God? Have you not listened to anything that I have been saying? I need this staff. If I don't have this staff, who am I? How do I take care of things? How do I physically keep up in life? I need this staff in order to be the shepherd that I am. And you want me to throw it down? Throw it down, Moses. Throw it down. You might think it was a crazy command from God to tell Moses, this 80-year-old shepherd, to throw down his staff. But consider this. If you were to look at the arc of Moses' life, the first 80 years prior to the throwing down of the staff, what had Moses accomplished? Well, he had a life of privilege. He murdered someone. He fled Egypt. He lived in exile. Now he's taking care of smelly, stupid sheep in the corner of nowhere. That was the first 80 years. Then he throws the staff down. What happens after the staff throwdown? He returns with God to Egypt, delivers an enslaved people, walks through the Red Sea, receives the Ten Commandments, takes the enslaved people to the Promised Land, and writes the Bible. I mean, this is what he accomplishes after throwing it down. What's in your hand this morning? Well, you've got your identity. And we have serious identity issues. We tend to form our identity around our season and station in life. We tend to conclude that our identity is I'm an employee, I'm an employer, I'm a student, I'm a parent. This is who I am. Do you ever wonder why the divorce rate goes up when the kids leave the house? Statistically, it does. Divorce rate goes up when the kids leave the house, in part because we conclude that our primary identity is parents. Now, don't get me wrong. Being a parent requires a tremendous amount of time and energy and attention, and it is a high calling, and it is a blessing. But when we conclude that our primary identity is I am a parent, then all of a sudden the kids leave. We're sitting across the table from our spouse that we do not know anymore. And we become disappointed with a God that we have functionally ignored because our primary job is I'm a parent. If our primary identity is I'm a parent, when that suddenly is not our primary use of time, we suddenly don't know who we are anymore. We don't know who the person is across the table, and marriage over. And if you think, oh, that will never happen to me, well, denial is not just a river in Egypt. Do you know why statistically the depression rate goes up after someone retires? Because our primary identity becomes our work. And again, we are to be responsible individuals, and work is a gift from God and is a blessing. But if our primary identity is our work, and then our work is no longer there, then all of a sudden we're left to be just rudderless. We don't know who we are. Because we have forgotten that our primary identity is not our station or season in life, but our primary identity rests in who we are in relationship with God. I love what Rick Warren writes. He says, start believing what God says about you, that he is pleased with how he created you, and that God defines you. You are not defined by your feelings. You're not defined by the opinions of others or by your circumstances. You're not defined by your successes or failures. You're not defined by the car you drive, the money you make, or the house you say you own when the bank really does. You are defined by God and God alone. And according to 2 Corinthians 1, he identifies you as his own. You are now identified with Christ and have the power of the Holy Spirit within you. You are God's precious child, and he created you in a way that pleases him. Brennan Manning takes it even a step further, and he says, define yourself radically as one beloved by God. This is the true self. Every other identity is illusion. God's love for you and his choice of you constitute your worth. Accept that and let it become the most important thing in your life. Your identity is not defined by the staff in your hand. Your identity is formed upon the relentless tenderness of God towards you, made evident in his son, Jesus Christ. That's your identity. Oh, and then there's the control issues. And we could talk a long time about our control issues. We're very uncomfortable feeling like we're out of control. How ridiculous is it to go, but I trust me more than I trust God. A dear friend of mine was in an accident this past summer. As a result, she is no longer able to drive. And that's driving her up the wall. She's having to rely on her husband more. She had to get a hold of her grandson to get a tutorial on how to use Uber. And she is wrestling with her control issues. I sat across the table from my aunt in Carson City. I asked her, I said, Aunt Alice, what's the most difficult thing that you're going through right now? And through her tears, she looked at Eric and I and said, I'm losing control. I can't control the pain. I can't control how often I will see and be in the lives of my grandchildren. I have no control over what's going to happen to my children. Sometimes what's in our hand is our control issues, a complete lack of faith and trust. And God says, throw it down. Throw it down. And then strength, my goodness. I love what it says in Proverbs chapter 3. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. Trust in the Lord with all your strength and lean not on your own understanding. In other words, don't trust you to be able to make everything okay. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and lean on him. I love what Chuck Swindoll says here. He says, don't rely on crutches of your own making. Don't attempt to limp along on your own strength. Instead, lean hard. And while leaning hard, fully acknowledge him. I love that. Don't rely on crutches of your own making. Most of us would rather limp along on the crutches of our own making than to throw them down and say, God, what do you have next for me? Most of us would rather live in the first 80 years of Moses' life trusting ourselves than to risk what's going to happen in the next 40 if we throw the crutches and staff down. What's in your hand this morning? Identity issues, control issues, relying on your own strength. Chances are God's going to say, throw it down. But if I don't have my staff, I'll be vulnerable and weak. I hope so. Are we going to rely on our own strength, or are we going to allow God to be God and allow him to rule and reign in our lives? This past week in Chicago, I started writing in my journal. I said, I want transformation. I want transformation in my life. If my life, if my relationship with Jesus looks the same in 6 months as it does right now, it means I'm holding on to the staff too tightly. If my relationship with Jesus looks the same 1 year from now as it does right now, it means that I am holding on to the staff too tightly. And this is what I wrote in my journal. I said, I want a transformation that reveals a renewed joy and hope and courage and reliance on the Holy Spirit. What's in your hand? You say a staff. You might this morning say, it's just a staff. Take out the word just. Because God can do remarkable things with just a staff. Or this morning you might go, I've got these things. And they're very important to me. Throw them down and see what God can do then. Here's how we're going to close the sermon. There's going to be a series of prayers that I'm going to put up on the screen. And I'll read the prayers aloud. If you want to read them, go ahead. If you just want to listen as I read them, I'll read through the prayer And then there will be a reflection question. Take some time with it. And then I'll move on to the next prayer. All the prayers are taken from Henry Nouwen's book, With Open Hands. And after you have gone through four different prayers and four different reflection questions, then the worship team's going to come back up and we're going to respond in song. But let's spend some time dealing with the stuff in our hands, with these prayers, and with our silent reflection. Dear God, I am so afraid to open my clenched fists. Who will I be when I have nothing left to hold on to? Who will I be when I stand before you with empty hands? Please help me to gradually open my hands and to discover that I am not what I own, but what you want to give me. And what you want to give me is love, unconditional, everlasting love. Your reflection question: what am I holding tightly in my closed fist? Dear God, I so much want to be in control. I want to be the master of my own destiny. Still, I know what you are saying. Let me take you by the hand and lead you. Accept my love and trust that where I will bring you, the deepest desires of your heart will be fulfilled. Lord, open my hands to receive your gift of love. Your question for reflection: in what ways am I afraid of dependence? Dear God, I am full of wishes, full of desires, full of expectations. Some of them may be realized, many may not. But in the midst of all my satisfactions and disappointments, I hope in you. I know that you will never leave me alone and will fulfill your divine promises. Even when it seems that things are not going my way, I know that they are going your way and that in the end, your way is the best way for me. Oh Lord, strengthen my hope, especially when my many wishes are not fulfilled. Let me never forget that your name is love. Can my hope in God grow deeper and stronger, even when my many wishes remain unfulfilled? Dear God, I do not know where you are leading me. I do not even know what my next day, my next week, or my next year will look like. As I try to keep my hands open, I trust that you will put your hand in mine and bring me home. Thank you, God, for your love. Thank you. Amen.